are now listening to the Build a Brain podcast with Dr. Jeannie Zayer. Join the quest to shape an efficient brain that fires on all cylinders and runs like a fine-tuned machine. You are now in the capable hands of an international presenter and a pathologically optimistic brain builder. Dr. Zayer will give you the right blocks to build that 3 pounds of cerebral muscle for you, your child, or the young adult you teach or mentor. Block by block, thought by thought, now is the time to build a better brain. Let's get started.
Friends around the world, this is Dr. Jeannie Zayer and my good friend, Mr. Kibway Cooper, the guru podcaster. He is the man that makes this all sound good. And I'm just so happy to be with you today. We've got a great topic. This is the Build a Brain podcast. And this is season two, where we are exploring the parameters of mediation as identified by Dr. Reuven Feuerstein. Today, our topic is optimistic alternatives. Mediating for optimistic alternatives. Thought it was interesting. Every one of these that Reuven identified, he identified by working with Holocaust survivors and parents and teachers and just people around him in this new country of Israel back in 1948, 49, all the way until he passed away in 2014. And so he was seeing the high quality human interaction that elicits the best cognitive change. And doesn't this one just make sense? That if we mediate someone, that there is an optimistic alternative, there is a solution to your problem, there is a path of hope. We tend to like hanging around with people that are optimistic. So I love that Reuven called himself a pathological optimist. So I decided I want to take on that label. So when I introduce myself to people, I'll say, yeah, and I'm a pathological optimist too. And at first they kind of blink and then they start laughing when they realize what I've said is I can't help it. I just try to see the best in every situation and in every person. Now, I want to share a story today because I have about 500 stories of all the clients that have come through our MindCap Center. One of them is an adult, and she's the most beautiful woman. We were at a retreat together, a women's retreat, and her sisters were with her. And they said, Jeannie, we want to talk to you. I'd spoken at the retreat, and they heard about the work that I do. And they said, our sister has had seizures since she was a little girl. And she's sitting there nodding, going, yep, I have. And so she doesn't drive. And she didn't get as far in schooling as she would have liked to. And she's always felt like there was so much more that she could do. And her sisters decided to take her to a neuropsychologist and get a full battery of tests done. And when they got done, the sisters and this lady, we'll call her Bobby. Bobby was sitting listening to the results, and she was very surprised, as were the sisters, because this neuropsychologist told her that, you know, your score is like the low range, you know, of IQ, and it probably isn't going to change much. Because you're already 50 some years old. So, you know, that neuroplasticity stuff, we don't really believe too much about that. So you just need to recognize and accept that this is who you are. So how do you think she felt when she walked out of that appointment, Kibway?
Probably utterly defeated, frustrated, and probably a bit helpless. I mean, someone told her she doesn't have any potential in life. That's ultimately what they said.
I know. Yeah, I'm a pretty chill person. I don't get angry a lot, but boy, I was kind of boiling inside.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, how could someone in the field of psychology not be reading all the brain science that is all over the internet. It's in all the college courses. Everybody is learning about neuroplasticity, and you're going to tell this poor sweet woman that there's no hope for her. So she started coming to MindCap after that, and we kind of turned that whole idea on its head. She spent 2 or 3 months with us coming to sessions. We offer group sessions that are less expensive, and a lot of times they're a lot of fun. And our women's groups, they really have a good time. We had one lady told me, she says, you know, coming to MindCap is like coming to a spa for my brain. I love it. Because we do work on cognition, and we try to find this sweet spot of challenge. Because how can I be optimistic about learning to think better or be a better learner if I'm overwhelmed, or you're giving me something that's so hard, there's no way I can do it. So we're looking to find what I call your sweet spot of challenge. That's how the brain grows and changes, is that it's been given a challenge that's new. You've never done this before. And with the Feuerstein program, we have like 25 different programs to pick from. So we don't have like a cookie cutter approach that, oh, this is what we do with every client. No, depending upon who you are and what you've told us your goals are in life, what you want to be able to do with your thinking skills or cognitively, we will design a program just for you. She came back in again a couple weeks ago, and it was just so fun to have her with us again because she was so much more confident and definitely has a whole lot more self-worth and a sense of competence since she's been coming to MindCap. So I think we have given her an optimistic alternative compared to what she was told by the neuropsychologist office.
Totally. And I love how you are correlating confidence with competence, because mm-hmm. I think those are sometimes the hidden ingredients I don't think people talk about. If you look in, you know, social media or whatever, we talk about men or women being confident and how that affects their relationships, mm-hmm. how that affects their job opportunities, blah, blah, blah. And I think what we're not speaking about is what you just said, this ability to be competent. And the more competent mm-hmm. you can be, mm-hmm. the more confidence you have knowing yes. that you have the ability to perform different mm-hmm. tasks well. And that competence mm-hmm. really doesn't, isn't dictated by a diagnosis. You could be diagnosed at like Bobby was with something that can't get any better, but yet you've enabled her to increase her competence, which completely changes the way that she experiences life anyway, regardless yes. of her yes. diagnosis. Yes. So I think that's really yes. important that we think about those things as being mm-hmm. Connecting ideas mm-hmm. or skill sets, because for me, if I don't feel competent doing something, that's where that fear comes in. That's where that fight or flight mm-hmm. response comes in. It's because I don't feel mm-hmm. like I can competently do something. Mm-hmm. But the more competent I feel, even when I'm dealing with things I'm maybe not as familiar with, I still have the same level of confidence, not because I know how to do it, but because I've done so many other things that were challenging as well. And so when you're talking mm-hmm. about mediating, and the feeling of competence and having an optimistic alternative view, I think feeling competent is a big part of that. That way you mm-hmm. can have the confidence to have faith that this doesn't have to always be how it is right now. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree. Sometimes we have people give us what I call a false sense of confidence. Oh, Jeannie, you can be a figure skater. You could be a basketball player. Well, you could tell me that till the cows come home, and it's not going to happen because those things are limited by my physical limitations. So we got to be careful with telling someone, oh, I know you can do it. We're trying to encourage someone. But at MindCap, we are waiting until we recognize what we see you are able to do. And then we point it out to you. Oh, look at this. huh, this is interesting. You really know how to do this, don't you? And we help them do exactly what you just said, is we help them have a good sense of competence so that then the confidence can come out of that true skill instead of a false sense of confidence.
That's really good. That's really good.
The word hope, which of course is related to having an optimistic alternative view of life, to have hope is what this is all about. And so I looked at the word and thought, oh, I'm going to make up an acronym for it. So my acronym for it is holding on to positive expectations. And sometimes I have parents who come to me who feel very hopeless. And I'll say, look, right now, I just want you to take that rope and tie a knot on the end and hang on. Just hold on and know that your team here at MindCap has very positive expectations for your child. I know you are really fearful that this is really hopeless right now, but we don't think it is. So you just hold on, and then eventually we want you to have those positive expectations too. Yeah. So hope is a very tricky thing, because if I have hope, I can become very, very disappointed if it doesn't come true. So hope is a scary thing to have. Have you ever seen that happen where you've hoped for something and then your hopes were dashed?
Yeah, that's really, that's a really, really good thing. I've definitely hoped for different things. I've struggled with hope. I have struggled with expectancy. I've struggled with optimism as well. And for those of you who have listened to Build a Brain, you guys know a little bit about me. But the environment that I grew up in, while I did have great parents, and I'm so grateful for them and for my family, it was not a great place to hope and dream. It was not a great place to have positive life expectancies. You know, there was a time where me and my brother, I remember this distinctly, we wanted to make it past 16. That was because in the area that I lived in Gary, Indiana, that was a statistic, is that a lot of Black boys were not living past 16. And that doesn't mean that they were all, you know, gangbangers or doing illicit activity. It's just the environment that we lived in could get really, really crazy. And whether you were a bystander or directly involved, it was just dangerous to be around.
Yeah.
And so the idea of hoping beyond, you know, just a birthday or another birthday, hoping beyond some adversity that you or your family is facing, you know, grappling with disappointment when things don't turn out quite the way that you thought they were going to. All of those things are very courageous things to do. And so when I hear you talking about, you know, understanding that you have hope and you can control the way that your brain is functioning, which affects your competency, which can affect your outcomes and your confidence in whatever situation you're in. I think that gives hope some handles, right? That gives hope something that's that knot that you can tie at the end, you know, because I know as long as I am executing on these skill sets, as long as I'm recognizing when I'm in survival mode, and as long as I'm being aware, and I think awareness has gradual stages. You know, year one of awareness is going to be very different than year five of awareness. So wherever it is that you start, you just start. So when you talk about hope, I think it's a really courageous thing to do, and it can be kind of daunting. But when you have tools like you're providing with this podcast, it makes it easier to have hope, because now I have more than just thoughts. I have actual concrete practices that I can get good at, I can get competent at, that make me feel like hope is not just some nebulous, formless, shapeless thing that I can't really ever truly harness. So I just love the way that you've broken down these skill sets, because hope is a hard thing to have. If you look at the news, you look at anything that's going on, it's just lots of rough things going on. So understanding how to embody hope through these skills that you're giving is just a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's wrap up with this idea of mediation. And when we ask questions, we are trying to mediate for optimistic alternatives. And so the mediation part is what we do as a friend, a mentor, a teacher, a parent. So I want you to think about these four things about your words, okay? When it comes to mediation, your words matter. Your words matter. So your choice of what to say, and man, I'm still working on this one. I think I really blew it this week. I think the words I chose were the wrong words. So it's not like I'm telling you, my friends, that I'm the expert, that I know how to do all of this, but I'm sure practicing and sharing it with you so that together we can both get better at it. So your words matter, what you say. Number two, your tone matters, how you say it. So it could be the very same words, but the tone of your voice can make a world of difference with how it's received by the listener. Number three, your timing matters. Sometimes we say things so fast that the listener is struggling to keep up with all the words that are pouring out of our mouth. So sometimes we need to slow down a little bit and give our listener time to process what we're saying. And this goes along with number four, the last one, is the quantity matters. So if you're saying too much, you may want to chunk it a little bit more and not say quite so much. So when you're mediating, you're often asking questions. So the words matter in your questions, the tone matters, the timing, and the quantity. So don't ask too many questions at a time. When we mediate, you ask a good question, and then you relax, and you lean in, and you look at the person that you asked the question to, and you wait. And boy, that took me a while to learn how to keep quiet, Jeannie, and just listen. And what I discovered is that children, or my friend, may know a whole lot more about the topic than what I thought they knew, because I finally decided to be quiet and just listen. So listening is the start of a high-quality human interaction. If the other person thinks you don't hear them, then there's going to be a breakdown, of course, in the conversation. So they've got to know that you hear. So you ask a question, and I'm just going to rattle off some questions that you might use. These are good examples of what do you see? What else do you see? Why is that so? Could you tell me how you did that? So what didn't work? Oh, what did work? Yes, you did get that right. How did you know it was right? What do you think the problem is? Can you think of another way we could do this? So why is this strategy better than the other one? How could you find out a new strategy to do it? So those are all samples of what we call mediation. So when you're trained in the Feuerstein method, you become a question collector. And by asking someone a quality question like that, and then actually listening to their answer, and then you have to really be careful about how you come back. You don't say, no, that's not what I meant. No, that's not what I wanted. You listen to their question and affirm what they did give you, and then ask a follow-up question, or maybe not. Maybe that's enough information. So you become very wise. The longer you do this, the longer you learn how to respond to someone's questions and with another question so that they can learn to think for themselves. And that is a very optimistic alternative compared to being told what to do with somebody shaking their finger at you. Well, I told you how to do it. How come you didn't listen? Why don't you do it the way I told you to do it? But when we ask questions, listen, and get them to figure it out for themselves, we are empowering them to be a better thinker so that they can go out in the world and do it on their own without us. Because as a friend, a mentor, a teacher, a parent, we want to work ourselves out of a job.
That is so good. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think the wrapping it up at the end by as a parent or a mentor, a mediator, you want to work yourself out of a job. You want to give whoever it is that you're working with all of the tools they need to make real decisions in the midst of whatever they may be experiencing at the time. And I want to ask you a question in closing. Is how do you mediate yourself at this level of understanding and awareness? You've worked with hundreds and hundreds of people. You know, you're at a different level of cognitive awareness than most people alive, probably, sheerly by the nature of what you do and what you've poured your life into. What are the things that you feel like really rattle you, and how do you come back to center from that?
Good question. Well, I kind of pondered a question like that of several years ago when I was trying to think, if I taught my women at Redemption House, these are women coming through the court system with addictions, and they have 6 months to get a new life put together. And they're beautiful women, and I absolutely love all 350 of them that I've worked with. And I thought, what's three questions that I could teach them to ask themselves? We call it self-mediation, when I think in my head. So the three questions are this: what do I see? What is the challenge? And what is my plan? Now, each one of those questions could take me a few seconds, a few minutes, or a few days to work out. The what do I see is, what do I already know about this? What have I heard? Or what else do I see? Do I need to collect some more information about this dilemma or this huge problem I have or this little dilemma I have? Doesn't matter how big the problem may seem. Do I have all the information I need? What do I see? Before I move to question two, what is the challenge here? What is the problem? What is the issue here that is tripping me up? Or why am I blocked? Or have I ever seen this before? So the second question is all about problem definition. And then we move on to question three. And again, a few seconds, a few minutes, or it could take a few days on each one of the questions. And then the last question is, okay, what's my plan? So where do I start? What could my first strategy be? Even if it doesn't work, what is a strategy that I could get started now that I have carefully defined the problem and I have collected all this information from question one and two? Now I'm ready to get a plan for how I'm going to tackle it. And in the past, I would jump in right away and try to start solving the problem right away. And I would not have collected enough information. And I'm still prone to do that. I still have to stop myself because I'm a get her done kind of person. I like to have my checklist and know, I got that done. I got that done. I love that. It feels so good. But if I stop and think, do I really have all the information or data or details collected that I need to make this decision? I'll often discover, no, it might be good to slow down and collect a few more. So those three questions are what I have developed, and I still have to use them myself almost on a daily basis. What do I see? What is the problem? And what is my plan?
That's really good. That's really good. And I think that's a great spot to leave it at.
All right. Well, thank you, Kiboy. It has been great being with you as always. I hope our wonderful listeners out there will share the episode. You know, there's a little box with an arrow in it, and you click on that and you can send it on through your phone as a text or an email to a friend and just say, hey, I think you might like to listen to this Build-A-Brain, this crazy lady in Indiana and a guy from Colorado get on here and talk about cognition. So please share, Build-A-Brain, and give us a nice review, and we will see you again, my friends. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Build-A-Brain podcast. If you're wanting to know more information on how to build a brain, please visit the website for the MindCap Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana at www.mind-cap.org. That's www.mind-cap.org. Children and adults from across the United States and Canada have found the cognitive help they needed at the MindCap Center. The specialized team is trained in all levels of the Feuerstein program and can literally help you or your child build a better brain. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.